You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join your hosts, Amy Ewald, Robin Moore, John Salaiji, and Abby Thibault, as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Welcome to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. I am John Salaiji, and beside me is my co-host, Amy Ewald. Today, we are joined by author and teacher Melissa Ford Luckin. Melissa is a prolific writer who writes across many genres. Melissa has written young adult fiction, romance novels, and nonfiction. Her romance novels include Not Home for the Holidays, Cowboy for Hire, Servant of the Undead, and many others. Her nonfiction includes The Binge Watcher's Guide to Riverdale and This Shark Swallow You Whole, essays on the cultural influence of Jaws. In addition, she is an editor of the Washington Square Review. Welcome, Melissa, and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So to start off with, at what age did you start writing and what drew you to it?
I think third grade was when I remember writing my first novel. I did what a lot of people do when they're really young, is I stole someone else's idea and then made it into mine. So it was a story about a haunted house with a haunted organ and some people staying in the haunted house. And so it was obviously inspired by a really old movie that I watched. And I think what drew me to it was being able to tell other people's stories and the imaginative part of it and getting to be someplace where you're not and making it real and making it real for other people. And the challenge of it.
So jumping ahead, what is your writing process now?
Oh, it varies quite a bit. If I'm writing a book, I'm what they call a pantser. So I will typically just sit down and write it up, like by the seat of my pants. There's another version called a plotter, and that person plots the whole thing out and then writes it from the outline. And I tried doing it with the outline, but I found that if I know everything that's going to happen, I lose that tension inside me that drives me to write. So it just works better if I don't talk about it to other people and I don't outline it very much at all ahead of time, and I just sit down and write it. It's not a pretty process. Usually it starts out great and I'll get a chapter or two and then I get into there. And because I'm making it up as I go along, I have to like block out everything. So part of my process, I guess, is like blocking out everything, like what day it is, where I'm sitting, what I'm eating, and then just kind of go into the back of my mind to find the story and then to get it to come out of my hands. So
do you tell it like sit down all in one shot and get it out, or do you kind of break it up?
I pretty much break it up. So one of the books you mentioned, Not Home for the Holidays, that one came about because the publisher was looking for Christmas novellas, and specifically like the opposite of the Hallmark trope-filled Christmas. So the Hallmark Christmas is usually, you know, like some kind of account executive or real estate woman from the big city decides that she's, you know, forgotten what it means to, you know, embrace small town values, and then she goes back to her hometown and then ends up giving up her high pressure job and moving home. So I flipped it and made mine a small town girl. So this is what I knew when I got started. It was going to be a small town girl. She was going to get a big opportunity to get a job and a high pressure job in a big city. So I just sat down and created a character who was in a situation that could potentially get her out of the country into the city. And so I just made it up as I wrote it. And then I
loved all the Michigan things in there. Yeah,
sure.
All the connections to Michigan. And she was from Michigan, the main character.
Yeah, so obviously I drew from my own experience. I set her in a small town where she wasn't really a good fit because she was not a small town kind of girl.
Yeah.
I've read interviews with other authors that kind of do that seat of the pants kind of writing. And one of the things that they have said is they like it because their characters kind of reveal themselves to them and the story reveals itself to them as they go. Have you found that to be the case when you write in this style?
Yeah, for sure. That's part of why when you're making it up as you go along, you're actually not making it up. I think it already exists inside you. And so when you have to block out everything else, it's almost like meditation, right? That's what you do when you meditate. So you have to silence your own voice and then hear the character's voice. And then the character will talk to you and reveal themselves to you. For me, it's mostly through action. So when I'm writing a scene, I have to listen to the back of my mind to find what the character is thinking and saying and doing, and then I just write that down.
So how do you write a good meet cute kind of scene? I'm always a fan of romance and rom-coms and that. So does that character kind of speak to you in that situation? Or,
well, for me, one of the troubles that I had was I always thought that it had to be unique, that I had to create something no one had ever seen before. But then after many years, it occurred to me that people like what they like, and they like the predictability of the meet cute, and they're anticipating it and they're expecting it and wanting it. And so for the Christmas novella, I just thought to myself, what's the traditional romantic Christmas moment? Kissing under the mistletoe. And then I write to that moment. And how can I make that happen? How does it fit into the story? So I think it's a combination of honoring the reader's expectations and putting your own spin on it. And obviously, it's got to match the characters.
Well, actually, talking about reader's expectations, one of the things that interests me and I like about romance novels is actually the readers and the fans of the genre. And I would say that the fans are very loyal and very invested in the genre.
Yep.
What has your experience has been both seemingly as a fan yourself and with other fans of romance novels?
I think it's understanding that it's a long-term relationship for me. It has been. So let me back up a little bit. What happened to me over time was I started to realize that different authors kind of create or draw different kinds of people. And the way that I figured this out was I would go to signings and there would be a big signing with, dozens of romance authors. And when you're a romance author, you always, set your table up and you have your swag and your little giveaway stuff and your books and maybe some candy. And there's usually a newsletter sign up and then your latest books. So everybody has their table set up the same way, and readers would come in. And sometimes readers would go over, to somebody beside me or across the way, and they would run up to the author screaming and waving their arms. Oh, my God, it's so-and-so. And then the author would jump up and then, oh, my God, and everyone's screaming, right? And for some reason, I thought that that was the epitome of success. And this is kind of, in hindsight, this is kind of dumb of me, but people would come up to my table and they would always be like, oh, my pen name's Isabel. And they'd be like, oh, hi, Isabel. It's really nice to see you. And I'd say, oh, thank you. It's nice to see you too. And they'd say, well, is this your newer one? Yes, that's my newer one. What kind is this? And what kind is that? And we would have a nice conversation. Sometimes they would get out a list of books of mine that they'd read. And they'd say, well, I've read this one and this one. What should I read next? And I'd ask them, what do you like? And we'd have this very calm, quiet conversation. And then I'd say, oh, would you like, some of my swag? Sign up for the newsletter. And say, oh, yes, thank you. Thank you. Very nice talking to you. And off they'd go, right? Yeah. And so, but meanwhile, next to me or across the way, there's other people screaming, oh my God! And so people don't come screaming up to my table. So I started to realize that, like I said, different authors will connect with different people. And whatever it is that's about me and my books, that's who I have, are people that are, not running up screaming to my table. And I was talking about this whole thing with another writer friend, and they said, well, would you want them to come screaming up to the table? And I'm like, probably not. That's just not me. You guys know me. Have you ever seen me run up screaming anywhere?
No, I've never seen you run into the classroom screaming.
Oh my God, here we are. I think it's just really interesting that if you've been writing for a long time, like I said, it's a long-term relationship. Readers begin to know what to expect, what tone and what values and what kind of, I don't know if they're hidden messages or worldview that's embedded in all of the stories. And so if you write over an extended period of time, even if you switch genres, readers will come to know that who you are deep inside is consistent, and that will remain consistent in the works, regardless of what genre it is.
Right.
So that's one of the nice things about having written and publishing for such a long time.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have a fan base. I'm assuming you've kind of cultivated it over the years. So how have you done that? How have you kind of built that throughout the years?
Probably multiple ways. One of them is doing the signings, because people like to come and say hi and, see the author in person. That's always nice. I have a newsletter, and people, can read the newsletter. All the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, Goodreads, and all, everything else. So people can find me in multiple places, but that doesn't happen overnight either. So sometimes people ask if they're a new author, which one should I use, which social media? And I always say, just pick the one that you like the best. And post as you feel called to post, and just understand, again, it's a long-term relationship. So you're going to build it over time, and you just have to be patient, and don't expect it to grow hugely in a year or two. It's going to take a while. So
whether it was at a signing or on social media, what's the best feedback or that you've ever received from a reader?
Okay. I had a moment where I was at a romance signing, and one of my quiet people came up to me, and she looks at my stuff, and, you know, she looks around the room, and she points to my books, and she says, "Yours are good." And so that was such a smell out.
Sometimes the simplest comments, right?
Yeah.
Are the best ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned a moment ago that you write with a pen name,
mm-hmm.
Isabel Drake, right?
Yep.
So how did you kind of land on that name, and why did you choose to use a pen name too?
I chose to use a pen name, I think, to separate off the fiction writing from my real world. I never like kept it secret or anything like that. It just felt like the right thing to do. It was also, I'm trying to think, maybe it was 23 years ago when I sold my first romance. And so at that time, it was a standard practice to always use a pen name if you wrote romance. I don't know why, but it was just kind of an assumption, a business practice. And so I just decided that I would. And I picked the name Isabel by going to the top 10 most popular baby names. And that was just one of them that I liked. So I'm like, okay, that sounds good. And then I used a Drake because it's easy to spell, it's easy to say, and it's close to the front of the alphabet, because a lot of times book signings are alphabetical order. So if you're in the front of the alphabet, you'll be closer to the entrance. So
yeah. Visibility, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it also means you're going to be sitting next to the same people all the time. So it's good to think about that ahead of time and make sure that your name fits in with whoever it is that you want to sit next to. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be super crafty, if you write a particular genre and you're using a pen name, where do you want to be in the bookstore, like on the shelf? Mm-hmm. And who are you going to be sitting next to?
That's interesting. I would never would have thought of that. So
That's an extra layer of craftiness.
Yeah. Very strategic.
Mm-hmm.
For
sure. It's a business.
Yeah,
and you want to be visible and you want to be findable. And like I said, Drake is easy to say. So if someone is, you know, at the bookstore, it's easy to spell it, easy to remember it. So, yeah.
So that kind of actually leads me to my next question that you've been writing for 20 some years from the sounds of it. How have you seen, especially the romance genre, how have you seen that change over time?
It's changed quite a bit.
The industry itself.
I published my first piece in 1990, so it's, you know, over 30 years. And romance, obviously now the flexibility with self-publishing has changed things quite a bit. So it used to be there were only certain publishers and certain venues for a romance novel, and that limited the possibility for certain plot lines and certain kind of characters, and even the book length. It used to be back when I first was publishing that romance books were always a certain word count. They might be 50,000 words or 70,000 words, and if it was a single title, it would be maybe 90,000. But it was so people crafted the stories based on that practical aspect of the word length. And it was kind of common knowledge that if it was your first book, the longer it was, the harder it would be to sell, because it would cost more to print it. And the more it costs to print, then the higher price. And if you're unknown, then no one's going to want to buy your like expensive book from a new coming author. So this was way back when books were still printed ahead of time and then shipped to bookstores. So, but now obviously there's print on demand. And so that, like just that practical aspects of the gatekeeping with the word count, and word count dictates what kind of story can be on the page. A 50,000 word story is not going to have that much emotional depth because you don't have that much time to write it. But if it's, you know, 90,000 or 100,000, you've got a lot more space, so you can have more emotional depth and more, you know, character arcs. So the technology was one of the things that impacted the kinds of books that were sold and who had access, you know, which stories surfaced. So editors would look for certain kinds of lengths, certain kinds of stories, and all because the books were printed ahead of time and shipped to bookstores, because bookstores still existed back then, what bookstores would put on the shelf would also dictate the covers, that kind of thing, what they would or wouldn't accept in their covers and the size of the book based on the size of the shelf from the bookstore. And like a lot of people don't know that when you walk into the bookstore and you see all the books on the tables face up by the door, publishers buy that space. So a lot of that kind of behind the scenes stuff bled backwards to the kinds of stories that people would write, because if you wrote a story that fit was outside of any of those markers, nobody would buy it because they couldn't, there wasn't a way to sell it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the technology and the format of the books, because when I was researching your books and in reading them, I read a lot of them on Kindle, and a lot of them seem to be readily available on Kindle, and I feel like I've experienced that with other romance novels as well. So what are your thoughts kind of about reading on e-readers, both as an author and as a reader, especially when it comes to romance novels?
Well, one of the advantages of the e-reader is that the stories can be any length. So if somebody likes to read like novellas, 30,000 words, you can easily publish that on a in an ebook, and people can get that on a Kindle. But because it's 30,000 words, a lot of times no one's going to publish that because it's so small, it won't make any money. So there's a lot more variety of word count length of possibilities on the Kindle. And I think it can also be a different kind of book that somebody will just, you know, download and read, and it's just part of their day. So the accessibility of it is one of the advantages.
I was thinking back as you were talking about when I started to read romance novels and things like that. And back in the 90s, it was a lot of the Harlequin romance,
yes,
like with Fabio on the cover. Yep. And maybe Daniel Steele was in there too. And then I remember being in my 20s then and being very excited when things like Bridget Jones's Diary, and that kind of, it's a little bit of a difference.
Yeah,
from
it's a little more of a women's fiction vibe to it. Even though it had a strong romance in it. And those were sold in the trade paperback size rather than the mass market, the narrower ones.
Yeah. So it is interesting to see the changes. What do you think of like fan fiction? I feel like that has come up a lot in the last 10, 20 years in comparison to the traditional methods.
Right. Well, obviously websites provide a space for that that didn't exist before. There probably was fan fiction before, but they couldn't use it. Like people couldn't read each other's and connect with each other over the stories the way that they can now. And I have a lot of students that write fan fiction, and that's how they get started writing it. And as an author, it's easy to get worked up and think that I would be bothered if someone took one of my characters and wrote a story about it, because I could be like, well, I made that person up. But the way that I see it is I don't make them, if I brought it to keep them to myself, I wouldn't send them out into the world to get published. So as soon as you send the character out into the world, they become part of the world and other people are going to read and interpret them. And I think that that's, personally, I think it's cool that people care enough about a character to want to make a world for them and see, you know, what they can do with them. And then people read each other's, and it's like a conversation through the stories of what they, because if you take a character and you slightly change them and you put them in a maybe a different context than where they were, and then everybody reads it, then you're having a conversation about your values and your worldview through the characters with each other.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true.
It kind of sounded like you did something similar with your first your first writing in third grade.
Yes,
as well,
thank you. It was fan fiction.
Yes.
It wasn't plagiarism.
Which actually, something else that interests me about your writing is going back to your very first thing in third grade, your use of horror and writing about horror as well as the romance novels. So what are kind of the similarities and differences between those two seemingly kind of different genres?
Emotional extreme would be one of them, because both the kind of horror that I write and the romances obviously have a strong like emotionality to them, and you're exploring someone's emotional journey. So I think that that's definitely something that matches up. Sensitivity to genre and reader expectations, I think, in both horror and romance is something that's persistent, and plot structure. But I think the emotionality probably is the strongest thing for me in what I've written so far. The way that I came to write the first of my horror books was through my MFA program, which is kind of funny because you think of an MFA program as, you know, being very fancy and literary. And we were given an assignment to read a tabloid newspaper, which I don't even know if those exist anymore.
Like the National Enquirer.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, a tabloid newspaper used to be this newspaper you could get at the grocery store, and they would have, like, you know, people that lived in caves, or somebody that was taken in a space, up to space, you know, got captured by aliens or something. Yeah.
Bat Boy.
Yes, Bat Boy. Yeah. That was a big one for a while. So the assignment was to read a tabloid newspaper and to borrow one of the concepts and write a short story from that. And so I borrowed zombies at Christmas time, and then I threw in a blizzard, and that's how I ended up writing the first piece of the zombie thing, was from my MFA. So that's, I think, unexpected.
Yes, I would.
I embraced that assignment
that, yes.
Fully.
Went for it. So, how you've said you've worked with publishers before, and have you self-published as well?
Yep, I've self-published one thing.
Okay. What, if you had a tips for somebody looking for an editor or an agent or to self-publish, somebody who wants to write, mm-hmm. and they've written something, what tips would you give them?
If they want to go what they call the traditional route, which is going with a established publisher instead of self-publishing, the one way to do it is to kind of think about what it is that you are writing or that you want to write. Go to the bookstore and find books that are similar in length, tone, and audience. So you're thinking, okay, I'm writing this book, and somebody who, you know, likes that one and that one and that one might also like mine, because what you're trying to do is figure out who would want what you have, what publisher publishes that particular kind of story and that particular length and those kinds of characters and that mood and has the same audience. And then so write down, all you have to do is get the book off the shelf, you know, see who the publisher is, and then start a list of publishers that publish your kind of thing. Then once you know who the publisher is, then you want to figure out who the editor is that acquired that particular manuscript. And there's, you can find that information on the internet. Publishers Weekly has a pretty good website, Publishers Marketplace, and that's a good place to go. So you want to figure out who wants what you are making and then send that to them, because it doesn't matter how great your book is. If your book is amazing and fantastic, say it's a romance and you send it to a publisher that only publishes mysteries, they can't. You know, and they won't.
Right.
So
they're not going to get to it or really look at it very close.
Yeah.
So
while a person is writing the manuscript, to figure out, you know, where it's going to go and then work toward that.
Yeah.
Somebody who's independent obviously doesn't have, if you're going to self-publish, you don't have those constraints, but you still need to know ultimately who your audience is going to be and start to build your foundation of your audience, I would say, before the book comes out, right away.
Yeah.
And sometimes people think with this, like we were talking about social media, sometimes people think that they need to be talking about their book. But I would say no, because you kind of think about who's your reader, what kind of stuff, you know, you're looking in for the space between like abstract ideas and topics and things that your writerly self expresses and where that overlaps with your reader. So, for example, I do a lot of like cocktail recipes. And so are there cocktail recipes in my books? No, not really. But for whatever reason, people that like cocktail recipes like my books. So that's what you're looking for, is the place where there's this kind of abstract overlap. And that's a good place to connect with the readers. So start to build the connection with your potential readers even before the book's out there.
Well, what are you currently working on right now, or what are you currently reading? Or
I am currently working on another Christmas novella.
Okay.
And this one has a haunted house in it. So this, maybe it was kind of inspired by my first piece that I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Only there's no haunted organ. There's a star-crossed couple that haunt this house. And the local lore is that until another couple meets and falls in love in the house, they will stay haunting the house.
Ooh. So, well, that sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here with us today, Melissa. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you can find many of Melissa's books available through Amazon. You should check out her blog. I think it's titled Adventures in MFA Land.
Yep. I have two, the isabeldrake.com for my commercial fiction, and MFA Land is my Melissa Ford Luckin blog.
Awesome. Well, I highly encourage our listeners to check that out. And you can check out today's episode of Written in the Stars and many of our other great LCC Connect programs at lccconnect.org. And thanks for listening, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. And in the words of Miguel de Unamuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again, and we shall recognize each other.